Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is September 12, 2019. This edition is brought to you by Paycademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about crypto brokerage Tagomi makes shorting Bitcoin and Ether easier. Binance to list its new dollar-backed BUSD stablecoin next week. Premier League's Watford FC puts Bitcoin logo on kit, accepts BTC. Kakao's Clay cryptocurrency to make first exchange listing. France says it will block Facebook Libra in Europe. Bobby Lee takes on hardware wallets with new device for 30-plus cryptos. Russia's largest bank buys $15 million in debt using Hyperledger blockchain. PwC report shows major growth in crypto M&A in Asia and Europe. Why the Marshall Islands is doing a pre-sale for its national cryptocurrency. History favors the bulls as Bitcoin price trades sideways at $10,000. Santander settles both sides of a $20 million bond trade on Ethereum. Bitcoin as digital gold narrative still unproven, warns expert trader. Now let's get started. Crypto brokerage Tagomi makes shorting Bitcoin and Ether easier. New York-based cryptocurrency brokerage and trading platform Tagomi allows its users to lend or borrow Bitcoin, BTC, and Ether, ETH, to facilitate long or short trades. Bloomberg Quint reported on September 12 that the exchange aims to make shorting easier by offering immediate access to multiple counterparties from a single platform. The state of shoring in crypto. Per the report, to short crypto assets, traders currently have to call a host of brokers and trading desks to find the best rates for borrowing and risk the market moving against them during the time it takes to put on a trade. Tagomi's chief operating officer Kevin Johnson commented on the difficulty of applying such strategies to crypto. In other asset classes this would be done with one click, but in crypto it's very long and tedious to try and put a short on. Shorting, part of the puzzle. Dennis Cho, director of trading at Pantera Capital, noted that the ability to short is important to traders. He noted that it is not only useful to those wanting to bet against crypto, but also to those looking to apply quantitative strategies, relative value trades and hedging. He commented, "The crypto space is volatile, so if you can't short, you're missing part of the puzzle." As Cointelegraph reported at the end of March, the New York State Department of Financial Services has granted a BitLicense to Tagomi. Binance to list its new dollar-backed BUSD stablecoin next week. Binance's new dollar-backed stablecoin, BUSD, created in partnership with the Paxos Trust Company, will be made available for trading on the cryptocurrency exchange the week of September 16. Announced on Thursday at CoinDesk's Invest Asia Conference, Paxos co-founder Rich Teo said, "We minted out first batch of Binance US dollars. It will be made available for trading starting next week, against a few trading pairs such as BTC and BNB." Earlier this month, the Paxos Trust Company, which already issues its own dollar-backed and gold-backed stablecoins, obtained additional regulatory approval from the New York Department of Financial Services (NYDFS) to issue BUSD. Now Binance will list the asset on its exchange, which is the largest globally by trading volume, alongside a slew of other stablecoins already listed on the platform such as USDT, USDC and PAX. Launching a stablecoin approved by the New York State Department of Financial Services (NYDFS) is a strategic step for Binance to provide on-chain financial services for users across the world, said Binance CFO Wei Zhou. This is not the first stablecoin to be created by Binance and listed on the cryptocurrency exchange. In July, the Jersey arm of Binance enabled trading for its own British pound-backed stablecoin called Binance GBP, BGBP. Seeing a multi-coin future where many different types and forms of stablecoins are traded actively on the exchange, Joe added, "We hope to launch more compliant stablecoins backed by fiat reserves in the future, introducing more stability to the cryptocurrency world." Premier League's Watford FC puts Bitcoin logo on kit, accepts BTC. The Bitcoin BTC symbol will now appear on the shirt sleeve of Watford Football Club players, and the team will also accept the cryptocurrency for merchandise purchases. The football club announced in a post on its website published on September 12 that the famous Bitcoin B logo will be featured on the players' uniforms as a result of the club's partnership with Bitcoin betting platform Sportsbet.io. The team will also accept the leading cryptocurrency as a payment for its merchandise. A public awareness campaign. According to the official post, the logo's addition to the uniform is part of a wider campaign aiming to improve awareness around Bitcoin and educate the public on the benefits of using cryptocurrencies. The head of marketing of the team's main shirt sponsor Sportsbet.io, Justin LeBrock, said that the company is giving back to the crypto community. "The crypto community have been hugely supportive of us since we began, so putting the Bitcoin logo on the sleeve felt like a fun way to give something back while also showing them our support." The sponsorship will be crowdfunded and anyone can bid Bitcoin to access a public LED space shown live during matches and exclusive Watford FC merchandise. LeBrock also added that he hopes the initiative will create even more buzz around cryptocurrencies. As Cointelegraph reported in August, the Dallas Mavericks have become the second NBA team to accept Bitcoin as a means of payment for match tickets and merchandise. Kakao's Clay cryptocurrency to make first exchange listing. South Korean messaging giant Kakao's Clay token, the native cryptocurrency of its recently launched Clay TN blockchain, is soon to make its first official exchange listing on Upbit's platform. GroundX, the firm set up by Kakao to develop the Clay TN network, announced the news in a Medium post on September 5, saying Clay will list on Upbit's Singapore and Indonesia platforms by the end of this month. Upbit Singapore revealed on September 6 that Clay will be listed following price discovery via a Dutch auction in which the price is reduced until buyers are found on September 18. The auction will run for 12 hours, or until a yet-to-be-determined hard cap is hit. Subsequently, successful bidders will receive their clays on September 19. A clay Bitcoin trading pair will be enabled at a future date. The exchange added that Upbit and Clay TN want profit from the auction and Upbit will redistribute all proceeds to users in the future. Kakao has not responded to questions from CoinDesk regarding how it plans to redistribute the proceeds and how much clay cryptocurrency it will make available for the auction. The exchange did say a total of 10 billion clay will be distributed through to 2021 in monthly tranches ranging from 29 million to 278 million tokens. The news that Upbit is the first platform to list clay is perhaps not surprising given the close association of the two entities. Headquartered in South Korea, Upbit is a crypto exchange operated by Dunamu, a firm backed by Kakao. In its announcement, Upbit said that in a private sale in December 2018, Clay was priced at 3 cents per unit. Later, in April 2019, a private sale saw the cryptocurrency reach 8 cents apiece. GroundX reportedly raised $90 million in a private coin offering this spring. It may seem unexpected that Clay is launching in Singapore and Indonesia first, and not in the home nation of both Upbit and Kakao. However, the listing announcement follows press reports suggesting that Clay would have trouble listing in South Korea, where initial coin offerings are forbidden. France says it will block Facebook Libra in Europe. The French finance minister has said the nation plans to block Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency in the EU over concerns that it poses a threat to the sovereignty of national currencies. According to the Independent newspaper on Thursday, Bruno Le Maire, economy and finance minister of France, said, "I want to be absolutely clear, in these conditions, we cannot authorize the development of Libra on European soil." Le Maire was speaking at the opening of an OECD conference on blockchain and cryptocurrencies in Paris, France. The Telegraph, meanwhile, adds that Le Maire said it would be a global currency, held by a single player, which has more than 2 billion users around the world. The monetary sovereignty of states is under threat. Le Maire reportedly expressed concerns that Libra may substitute itself as a national currency and potentially cause financial disruption. I don't see why we should dedicate so much effort to combating money laundering and terrorist financing for so many years to see a digital currency like Libra completely escape those regulatory efforts, he said. The Libra Association has stated this week that it will maintain AML guidelines, which its members will be expected to comply with if they choose to provide financial services on the Libra network. The association will set standards for its members to maintain AML and anti-fraud programs, and to cooperate with legitimate law enforcement investigations. The French minister has previously expressed concerns over Libra's threat to national currencies, saying after the cryptocurrency's debut in June that it is out of question that Libra be allowed to become a sovereign currency. It can't and it must not happen. A CNBC report indicated that Le Maire also said today that he's discussed the creation of a public digital currency with outgoing European Central Bank President Mario Draghi and Christine Lagarde, who will take over his position later this year. CoinDesk has reached out to the Libra Association for comment and will update this breaking story if more information is received. Bobby Lee takes on hardware wallets with new device for 30-plus cryptos. The founder of China's first Bitcoin exchange, Bobby Lee, has returned to the cryptocurrency spotlight with the launch of a new wallet. As confirmed on his social media profiles, Lee, who sold BTCC in 2018, now aims to corner the portable hardware wallet market. Lee returns with credit card hardware wallet. His product, Ballet, is a credit card-sized device offering cold storage of Bitcoin, BTC, and 14 altcoins, including Ether, ETH, XRP and Litecoin, LTC. Another 18 will be added soon, the project's website states. Lee unveiled Ballet at the CoinDesk Invest Asia conference on September 12 and is already signing up users for a public beta program. There are a lot of people who come to me and say, Bobby, will you help me store my Bitcoin for me? He told financial news publication Yahoo Finance about why he entered the wallet sector. Fresh competition for market stalwarts. The device will compete for space in a market dominated by a few well-known brands. Trezor, Ledger and KeepKey control the majority of hardware wallets available to regular cryptocurrency users, these nonetheless not coming in credit card form. Made of steel, Ballet's appearance echoes that of CryptoSteel, a backup seed protector device sold in tandem with Trezor's wallets. Hardware wallets allow for better protection of funds if used correctly, while some manufacturers have faced criticism over standards. Last year, a new offering from BitFi saw a PR nightmare after testers debunked the company's claims its wallet was unhackable. The launch had the support of Bitcoin proponent John McAfee, who vigorously defended the wallet until BitFi admitted it was vulnerable. Russia's largest bank buys $15 million in debt using Hyperledger blockchain. Sberbank, the largest bank in Russia, has bought about $15 million worth of accounts receivable from the Singapore-based commodity trading giant Trafigura using a blockchain. The pilot transaction was made on the Hyperledger Fabric platform, a spokesperson for the bank said. It took advantage of Fabric's private collections feature, which can keep a certain set of data confidential among a subset of network participants. The system piloted by Sberbank leverages smart contracts written in the Scala language, using the Aurelia framework and Sberbank's own cloud solution, Sbercloud. It takes 1 second to form a block of complete transactions, the company claimed. The deal was revealed last week during the Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok, Russia, by Sberbank's first deputy chairman Alexander Vedyakin, but the size and technical details were not made public at the time. The receivables acquired by Sberbank were owed to Trafigura by a large client from Turkey. In his press statement, Vedyakin said the technology helped make document flow more efficient, reducing the time needed to complete a deal from 1 day to 1 hour. Our blockchain pilot project records every step of the transaction, request for purchase of receivables, application processing and its approval with the bank, issuing the bank's offer, confirmation of terms by Trafigura, and settlement of the transaction, Vedyakin said. Ongoing evolution. The pilot demonstrated the progress made by the blockchain tech in general and its value for the global business use cases, Sberbank said. What we see in 2019, and in this pilot in particular, is an ongoing evolution of this tech, from a promising but not yet developed technology into a more advanced and mature solution ready to live up to its initial disruptive image, the bank's spokesperson said, adding that Sberbank and Trafigura are considering expanding the use of blockchain in global trade finance. A Trafigura spokesperson told CoinDesk that the transaction flowed seamlessly between Sberbank and Trafigura, and the two companies are discussing how they can use the tech for other use cases. Sberbank's blockchain lab previously used Hyperledger Fabric while investigating the opportunities of distributed ledgers. In November, the bank completed an off-exchange repurchase agreement deal with the Cyprus branch of the Russian investment company Interos. In 2017, Sberbank launched another pilot, in which a payment involving the Russian companies Megaphone, Megalabs and Alpha Bank was recorded on a distributed ledger using Fabric. Sberbank is also a member of the FinTech Association, a consortium backed by the Russian Central Bank that's working on Ethereum-based enterprise platform dubbed MasterChain. PwC report shows major growth in crypto M&A in Asia and Europe. A majority of fundraising and M&A deals in the cryptocurrency industry are now happening in Asia and Europe, surpassing the previously dominant role of the Americas, according to a new report from PwC. Released on Thursday at CoinDesk's Invest Asia event, the professional service firm's analysis of the crypto ecosystem found that 41% of global fundraising deals in Q2 2019 took place in Europe. Europe saw 34% of global fundraising deals in the same period last year. Similarly, cryptocurrency fundraises in the Asian market have jumped significantly, accounting for 26% of the deals in Q2 2019. Combined, the two regions accounted for 67% of the action in Q2 2019. Meanwhile, the report identifies a significant drop in crypto fundraising deals in the Americas. While the region accounted for 51% of global deals in Q2 2018, the Americas captured just 28% in Q2 2019. Globally, however, the total number of fundraising deals, as well as the amount of capital involved, have both declined by more than 50% from as high as $408 million in Q1 2018. That said, given Bitcoin's recent price rebound, the report indicates there has been an uptick in the value of global deals, which has grown to $250 million in Q2 2019 from $166 million in Q1. Speaking to this trend, Lucy Gazmararian, senior manager of PwC's fintech and crypto team, said at Invest Asia, "The price of Bitcoin is the bellwether for the industry and for the sentiment of investors. As the price of Bitcoin has recovered, we see the sentiment has become more positive and have seen more activities in fundraising and M&A activities." The PwC report added that the firm has observed a similar trend in the mergers and acquisitions realm, for which the dominance of the U.S. market has decreased from over 80% in the first half of 2018 to 48% in Q2 2019. Meanwhile, the combination of M&A deals that happened in Asia and Europe jumped from just 17% in early 2018 to over 50% now. Elsewhere in the report, the firm observed a significant decline of M&A deals in the cryptocurrency mining sector since the start of 2018, while investment interest has shifted more towards blockchain infrastructure development. Gazmararian added, "Since the first half of 2018, we have seen the investment in the mining sector has been consolidating while healthy activity remain in blockchain, exchanges and trading infrastructure." In a statement, PwC fintech and crypto leader for Asia Henri Arslanian echoed that sentiment. "Except perhaps for crypto mining, we are seeing capital flow to every sector of the crypto industry," Arslanian said, "in particular, crypto exchanges as well as broader crypto trading and blockchain infrastructure companies." Why the Marshall Islands is doing a pre-sale for its national cryptocurrency. A small island country in the Pacific has plans to launch its own government-issued cryptocurrency called the Marshallese Sovereign, SOV. It was revealed Wednesday at CoinDesk's Invest Asia event that the Republic of the Marshall Islands (RMI) would be introducing the SOV through a forthcoming token pre-sale. Called the Timed Release Monetary Issuance (TRMI), RMI Minister David Paul explained that anyone, regardless of location, can register for the pre-sale on the newly launched website of the SOV Development Foundation. Paul stressed that the actual pre-sale for SOV in which users buy TRMI units that can later be exchanged one for one with SOV units is not yet live and is still a work in progress. But once launched, Paul estimated it would be 18 to 24 months, or even less, before the real SOV is made available to the public. It could be well vetted enough right before the TRMI that we don't need the full 18 to 24 months, Paul said. You probably only need 6 months if all the preparation is done beforehand. One of the primary reasons for doing this pre-sale, according to Paul, is to get a sense of the levels of liquidity and market interest in the SOV cryptocurrency. Paul said, TRMI is really another way of doing an initial coin offering but in a more responsible and methodical manner. That's really the TRMI. You have to look at how to establish liquidity. When you do TRMI, you're looking at the appetite for the product and how it's going to behave in the markets. This is a doubly important concern for government officials in the Marshall Islands given that the launch leaves no room for failure. For us, it's really the reputation and integrity of a country on the line. We've got one shot at this, said Paul. Regulatory concerns. Apart from gauging market interest, Paul and his team at the nonprofit SOV Development Foundation are also focused on addressing regulatory concerns surrounding the SOV raised by other countries and international organizations. Last September, the International Monetary Fund (IMF) advised against the SOV project, saying that the introduction of a cryptocurrency as legal tender in the country could increase macroeconomic and financial integrity risks. Even the U.S. Treasury had told the RMI government point blank, according to Paul, that it didn't like the SOV. However, following nearly a year of internal discussions, Paul affirmed that U.S. officials are saying this project could work. Getting the regulators on board is a key prerequisite to launching the TRMI, Paul said, adding, a nation cannot rebrand like a company can. That's why we have to do this in such a way that's different. It has to be transparent. It has to be inclusive. We need to make sure that we work with regulators to ensure that once we launch, they don't go back and say, oh, you haven't done this. You should have done that. History favors the bulls as Bitcoin price trades sideways at $10,000. View: Bitcoin's long-term bullish bias remains intact, with prices holding well above the historically strong support of the 3-day chart's 55-candle exponential moving average (EMA), currently at $8,972. The line served as a strong base in the 20,162,017 bull market. A bullish falling wedge breakout on the 4-hour chart looks likely and could pave the way for a retest of recent highs above $10,900. The prospects of a breakout would weaken if prices find acceptance below Wednesday's low of $9,855 on the back of a rise in selling volumes. That would expose support at $9,320 August 29 low. Bitcoin's BTC price rally has stalled in the last 10 weeks, but the bullish case remains intact with prices hovering well above a historically strong price support. The leading cryptocurrency broke into the latest bull market on April 2 with a high volume rise from $4,000 to $5,000. It subsequently went on to hit a 17-month high of $13,880 on Bitstamp on June 26. Since then, however, the cryptocurrency has charted a narrowing price range with lower highs above $12,000 and higher lows below $10,000, as seen in the chart below. The consolidation is reminiscent of a contracting triangle near $6,000 seen in the August to October period last year. That narrowing price range had ended with a downside break in November. The latest consolidation, therefore, may force investors to question the validity of the bullish breakout confirmed in April. However, it is too early to call an end of the bull market, and the risks will remain skewed to the upside as long as the cryptocurrency is defending the 3-day chart's 55-candle exponential moving average. That EMA line served as a strong base during the 20,162,017 bull run. As of writing, the EMMA is located at $8,972, while at press time BTC is changing hands at $10,145 on Bitstamp, representing a nearly 1% gain on a 24-hour basis. At the end of October 2015, Bitcoin's outlook turned bullish with prices rising above $300. The cryptocurrency then formed a series of higher lows and higher highs to hit a record high of $20,000 in December 2017. Notably, the higher lows, marked by arrows, were established along the ascending, bullish, 55-candle EMMA, and almost every bounce ended up setting a higher high. For instance, Bitcoin's pullback from the June 2016 high above $770 ran out of steam below the 55-candle EMMA at $542 in August 2016, following which prices rallied to $1,100 by January 2017. On similar lines, pullbacks to the 55-candle EMMA in April 2016 and March, July, and September 2017 fueled stronger rallies. Not once were sellers strong enough to force a convincing close below the 55-candle EMMA. Hence, the bullish case put forward by 2019's second quarter price rise is likely to weaken only if and when the 3-candle finds acceptance under the 55-candle EMMA, currently at $8,972. In fact, any pullback to the crucial average will be the biggest test for the bulls. A strong bounce from that level will likely cement expectations of a rally to fresh record highs above $20,000. As for the next 24 hours, the odds appear stacked in favor of a move higher for BTC. BTC is trapped in a falling wedge pattern, a bullish continuation setup, as discussed yesterday. Trading volumes have dropped throughout the pullback from $10,949 to $9,855, Tuesday's low. So, the probability of BTC witnessing a wedge breakout is high more so, as the widely tracking trend following moving average convergence divergence (MACD) histogram has crossed above zero, confirming a bullish reversal. The Chaikin Money Flow Index, which incorporates both prices and trading volumes, is also reporting a bullish divergence higher lows contradicting lower lows on price. A wedge breakout, if confirmed, would open the doors for a retest of recent highs above $10,900. The bullish case would weaken if prices drop below Wednesday's low of $9,855 with a solid rise in selling volumes. Santander settles both sides of a $20 million bond trade on Ethereum. Spanish banking giant Santander says it has become the first institution to use a public blockchain to manage all aspects of a bond issue. Revealed Thursday, the company not only used a token on Ethereum to represent the $20 million debt issuance but settled it with another set of ERC-20 tokens representing cash held in a custody account. To understand why that's important, imagine asking someone a question on WhatsApp and waiting for them to mail a postcard with the answer. That's what it's like to issue securities on a blockchain while settling the cash side of the trade through the analog legacy system. But Santander, in this analogy, conducted both parts of the conversation digitally. Previously, the World Bank issued a similar blockchain bond but used a private version of Ethereum. French lender Société Générale issued a bond earlier this year on the public Ethereum network but said nothing about cash on ledger. Santander is claiming bragging rights since every part of its process is digitized, automated and on-chain, including having Santander Security Services custody the cryptographic keys for the tokenized security and tokenized cash. However, like SocGen, Santander issued the blockchain bond to itself, meaning no outside investors were involved. It's an evolutionary step, John Whalen, head of digital investment banking at Santander's corporate and investment bank, told CoinDesk. There are no secondary markets yet, but we are on that path. Plain vanilla. Describing the project as a real money pilot, Antonio Toro, head of funding at Santander, said the transaction was a plain vanilla bond with a one-year maturity, four quarterly coupons and a standard rate of 1.98%. For Santander, this is really much more of a technology innovation issue than a pure financial issue. We regard this an important first step that will be followed by more complex transactions, Torrio said. Whalen said the tokenized cash was held in escrow in a smart contract on the public Ethereum blockchain, until the issuer had underwritten the transaction and instructed the blockchain to perform the delivery versus payment, at which point the cash and bonds were swapped simultaneously and irrevocably. The process started Friday and wrapped up Tuesday. Asked if Santander's custody services could equally hold fully fledged digital assets such as Bitcoin and Ether, Whalen said this was technically possible but not the bank's plan, adding, "At the bank, we are not interested in cryptocurrencies directly. The technology is the same underneath, but we are interested and our customers are interested in traditional dollars, euros, pounds, and that's our space." Nivora's role. Santander relied on London-based technology provider Nivora, which the bank has invested in, to assist with the digitalization of the issuance. Nivora's CEO Avtar Sara pointed out that creating a blockchain bond is not difficult. Essentially, all you are doing is creating a notarized form of information using a smart contract. This is not really digitizing a bond, he said. All you are really doing is digitizing the process for registration and settlement, and even for the settlement part you are only addressing half the problem because you haven't got cash on the blockchain. Nivora allows all documentation and negotiation around issuance to be digitized in such a way that data can be encrypted so each party can only see certain fields in the document, as opposed to emailing PDFs around and such like. That's the key significance of what Santander is doing here, said Sarah. They are saying let's digitize the entire process. We are not now doing the bond construction in the old-fashioned way, inputting data manually in an insecure fashion into a blockchain to tokenize it and doing the same with cash. That's absurd. The Santander execution is the first truly digital front-to-back execution process, which securely uses relevant data to tokenize both the assets and cash to enable on-chain settlement and coupon payments, Sarah added. Vote of confidence? One conclusion that can be drawn from Santander's efforts and others doing similar things is that the banking world is slowly but surely coming around to trust Ethereum. This is perhaps not so surprising given it is almost 5 years since the second largest blockchain switched on its mainnet. Whalen pointed out that Bitcoin and Ethereum have the unique characteristic of having had 100% uptime since launch, in this regard, unlike any other computing system on the planet he could think of. He concluded, "I think it's becoming apparent that Ethereum is just part of the internet. Bitcoin as digital gold narrative still unproven," warns expert trader. For many, trading cryptocurrency can be a challenge, but the process is made easier if one relies on a combination of technical analysis tools and oscillators to provide insight on which path digital assets like Bitcoin, BTC, might take. Typically, one sees traders employ the Relative Strength Index (RSI), Moving Average Divergence Convergence (MACD), Stochastic RSI (STOKE), and a mixture of Exponential Moving Averages (EMAs), Bollinger Bands, Volume Measurements and so on. This is good and well, and utilizing these tools often provides great results for traders. The difficulty of relying on these tools increases when Bitcoin's price action becomes range-bound and consolidates for lengthy amounts of time like it has done for the past 2 weeks. This leads intraday traders to search for other tools that provide insight into Bitcoin's market structure. To get some clarity on the less studied metrics retail investors might be unaware of, Cointelegraph spoke with Christopher Inks of Texas West Capital Market Research, an educational firm dedicated to providing accurate market data and digital asset trading courses for novice traders. Cointelegraph, pleasure to meet you, Christopher, and thanks for taking the time to have a chat. To kick things off, tell us what brought you to crypto? Christopher Inks, the whole reason I do what I do with Texas West Capital is that I noticed the really bad analysis, pump and dumps, and other nonsense being published across various crypto media, major media and on Twitter. This was especially bad during at the end of 2016 leading into 2017 and still continues to be an issue today. So being able to share good information with new traders is an important thing to me. CT, recently there's been a lot of talk about funding amongst pro traders and some look to the levels of funding on perpetual contracts as a method for determining whether Bitcoin's spot price will go bearish or bullish on the larger exchanges. To what degree does the level of funding from perpetual contracts impact Bitcoin price action? C. I would argue that it has more to do with funding rate extremes than anything else. And even then, it is an indicator of which way the spot market is already heading rather than something that causes the market to change direction. The funding rate by itself is just a mechanism used by the exchange to help their synthetic product, perpetual swaps, in this case, mimic spot price. If it's negative, then short contract holders pay long contract holders since it means that the previous 8-hour period saw swap contracts trading at a discount to the underlying spot price. If it's positive, then long contract holders pay short contract holders for the opposite reason. However, as long as the funding rate is low, there isn't a lot of encouragement to move traders from long to short or short to long. It's when the funding rate starts increases strongly that the market participants are more likely to move away from the pain of holding their position. But even at that point, it's doing nothing more than keeping the exchange's synthetic product's price comparable to the spot price. To this end, traders can potentially use the funding rate to understand which way spot price may be heading and then trade spot on other exchanges accordingly. CT, what is open interest and to what degree does it dictate Bitcoin's future price action? C, open interest is just the number of contracts outstanding, which basically means it is a measure of market activity. If open interest is increasing, then we know that new money is entering the market and, as a result, the prevailing trend should continue. A decline in open interest signals that the trend is likely ending since money is leaving. CT, what's your take on the whole Bitcoin as a store of value and hedge against volatility narrative that has become the consensus amongst analysts and investors at the moment? C. With many fundamental legacy market indicators flashing incoming recession, Bitcoin market participants are pushing the Bitcoin as digital gold narrative. But the truth is that we don't know if it really is yet. The Bitcoin market has only been around during a bullish economy, so we don't know how it will perform during an economic downturn. We do know that Bitcoin's volatility makes it a risky asset and in a risk-off environment that normally means that it shouldn't interest people. Smart traders and investors will pay keen attention to the Bitcoin market if a recession hits and play the market accordingly. A strong Bitcoin in a recession will go a long way to supporting that digital gold narrative. CT, from your experience as an educator and 20-year trader, do you think it's better for traders to exploit intraday moves or swing trade with the macro perspective in mind? Furthermore, do you think intraday traders should use leverage to better capitalize on crypto's volatility? C. I am a firm believer in the swing trade, and this is especially so for new traders. The newer the trader, the longer the time frame they should necessarily be trading. Personally, I trade intraday and multi-day swings and that's with 20-plus years experience. By doing this, traders can more effectively utilize leverage as they find more prominent bases from which to long or ceilings from which to short. It also helps with controlling their emotions to a much greater extent than 15 or 30 minute charts. CT, previously, you've said psychology plays an important role in market movement and the decisions traders make. Can you share a scenario where psychology determined market movement and crypto price action? How do you make this systematic? C, charts are just visual representations of human interaction, and that interaction is based on the movement between fear and greed. So understanding this, traders are in a better position to read the volume and price action to decipher what is truly going on. If you're waiting for the news to make a move, then you're always reacting. But being able to read that volume and price action makes you proactive as you can set positions before the news comes out so you are able to ride the movement rather than dealing with your emotions as you fight to enter after the movement has started. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.